Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and this is Here Be Monsters, the Sunday show with your hosts, Jack Jodell and Wayne Johnson, and we'll begin this show with the glad tidings from abroad.
Massive protest the world over. Incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, A, and B, he actually pushed fake news at the European Press Corps, and the NBC gal who was there questioning him, when the Sun actually released the whole tape saying exactly what he said about Theresa May, who, by the way, stood by and seemed to capitulate. She's pretty much toast. In her, I mean, but a PM like that, of course, he only does that to face-to-face like that with women.
Yeah, I know. He's so masochistic, and he hates powerful women. He sees them as threatening, and he acts real bully like he's a big tough guy. But deep down inside, he's petrified of her and Angela Merkel. He's petrified of them because they're a threat to him in his mind.
Well,
he's wacky.
Jack, I really can't see how he'd be really petrified of Theresa May because she is a wimp. Let's face it.
Yeah,
she
right.
Really,
but he doesn't like the fact that she has power and she's a head of state. And the same thing with Angela Merkel. He really sees her as a threat.
Oh, yeah.
Angela Merkel is now the leader of the free world, along with maybe the French president, and coming in a close second.
Yeah.
That's the leaders of the free world.
That's about right.
We've lost our position altogether.
Because Trump has ceded any responsibility for the free world. He's just abdicated his position in favor of pleasing Vladimir Putin. So,
the guy is just absolutely
pathetic.
The 12 indictments that were handed down by Mueller, which, come on, son of a bitch, get to your job. Real indictments on the goddamn table. I'm sick and tired of waiting for that one. I got to tell you, boys.
Yeah.
I think he's
be extradited to this country for the crimes that they committed against our democracy at Trump's request and the other prominent Republicans now, it looks like, because we just had six of them visiting Putin with absolutely no idea what's being said in that room.
It's a gentleman's tea circus.
But if the only American indictment that comes down in that is Roger Stone, then my thumb to my teeth to Mueller. You know what I'm saying, gentlemen?
Yeah.
But that's just ridiculous. And the other thing is, he's out there now saying where he said it was all a hoax before. Now Trump is telling the European press that it's all Obama's fault.
Yeah,
now,
everything's Obama's fault.
He does hold some blame in this, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, I agree. But not to the degree that Trump wants to attribute it to him. It's just unbelievable.
Well,
Trump always projects stuff on other people that he does himself or that he has a hand in, and this is another clear case of that. Plus, the amount of bullshit he's spewing out this past week on the overseas trip, when Kristen Welker, he basically lied to her, and she had access to the tape that he had given the Sun newspaper, the Murdoch-owned Sun newspaper in London, criticizing Prime Minister Theresa May. And then, I wasn't critical of her. I praised her. The guy's such a liar. It's just unbelievable.
Well,
I think he lies so much, he doesn't even think straight. He just spews out of his mouth, and then he has to pay for it later. But he don't care. He just doesn't care.
There's a very good quote from Albert Einstein that says, if you can't be trusted with the truth in simple matters, you have no business being entrusted with the truth in the major ones. And someone is a pathological liar.
The media doesn't push him on anything. They don't
push
him.
That was supposed to be the
point. I would push
for
him.
The free press. call him out on it, throw it back into his face.
Right. With malice, beyond that now.
Exactly.
Well, we're starting to see the media question him a little bit, or at least making an editorial while they're talking. Oh, the other morning, I'm so proud of Mika and Joe, and I don't normally like those people, but by and large, everything Putin was saying, they were calling him out right as he was speaking, calling him out on the carpet and saying, no, this is not true. Here's the actual facts. It was wonderful. I want to see more of that.
They've been doing that right along, but they still, both of them, lean back to trying to save the Republican Party, which is just outrageous.
Yeah.
It's just outrageous. The Republican
Party. Trump. It's no longer the Republican Party. It's the party of Trump. It's the Trump party.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. And when you render
it down, it is nothing more than the Klansmen, the John Birch Society, and the neo-Nazis. That's what we have. That and corporations.
No, it's not, Wayne. You can't put it all on boogeymen. You got guys like Mitch McConnell and...
Well, he's bought out. He's a toady. He's just a toady.
He's a toady, yes, but he's not a Klansman. And when we keep putting it on to all of these boogeymen, instead of calling out what is, it just keeps the freaking game, the word game,
well,
going.
Well, I think the point here, you guys, is that the Republicans are in control right now, at least, and that's why we got to get them out. But the fact that they are in control and they're doing absolutely nothing to curtail or refute these boogeymen that are out there, that are very real, that are influential on our national politics these days. That is what's so reprehensible. It's just disgusting, and it's frightening, really.
Well, you know, the American involvement in this Russian crime against the country, what happened in the last election, and it's been going on for elections before that.
Not only in our country.
Oh, no. He's done it all Democratic countries, Europe.
Putin's a thug, and so is Trump. They're made for each other. They're both thugs.
Well, what's left for the Mueller investigation now is the American counterparts in this.
Yeah, they got to nail them.
One indictment on the table for Roger Stone. You know, piss on him. I'm not in a good mood about it.
But Manafort is nailed. Mike Flynn's already confessed. There are, you know, Bob Mueller has been doing a great job in comparison to the Whitewater probe that yielded nothing, and previous other probes. He's had a lot of good results happen so far, and we're not done yet.
I agree, but I expect confidence from him. Republicans, I've never expected competence from, not since I'm 17 years old.
Yeah,
so,
I know what you mean.
It's in the incompetence that the country is being, you know, they finally got rid of Pruitt, but do you think he's going to take any kind of blame or...
Oh, hell no. He'll just walk away scot-free.
Well, until another party gets in control of D.C., because I think they will go after him. You know,
we can only hope.
The more there is a new movement in the Democratic Party that says, and they're voting out a lot of the old guard, like the young lady in New York who just upset the incumbent. What's the lady out in California?
Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, well, the Cortez. But what's the older lady out in California? She's running behind now in a ticket. I'm drawing a blank.
Oh, in a primary out there?
Huh?
In a primary, Wayne?
Yeah, well, yes. It's in where they are. They're counting it. Right now, she's running behind.
Oh,
basically,
an old guard. If she's old guard, good. Get her the hell out of there.
That's what the Democratic Party's got to be. They got to get a new blood. They get them in there. They get in control. They will pursue the treasonous acts of Trump and his cronies.
I agree.
I hope they do.
I agree, but getting him in there is another tied all together, but those kids are out on the road from Parkland all over the country this summer. That's great, too.
They came to Minneapolis not too long ago. That's great. They're all over the place.
Yeah, they're registering voters.
Yep.
They're waking kids and people up to what's going on.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a lot of positive motion, but getting people off their asses and into the voting booth, you know, Democrats are
For complaining and bad for action. Let's hope that gets reversed now.
We can hope so. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Because we can't sit around and complain anymore. We're just as bad as they are if we don't do anything. That's the whole thing.
You got to get out. Quite right.
So Trump is going to sit down with Putin tomorrow, and 10 to 1, all he's going to be doing is glad-handing with him because he wants to build hotels in Moscow.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, yeah.
Well, on his agenda. Are these people not
And Putin, you know, Trump says, oh, I've been preparing for this my whole life. Give me a break, Trump. You don't know what the hell you're getting into. He has no clue. He just thinks he does. This guy is so delusional. It's dangerous, really, because Putin is a master at his craft. He's been at it for more than 20 years, and he knows all the ins and outs, and he knows how to manipulate people, and he also knows how to exterminate people. So he's way over Trump's head. Trump is in la-la land if he thinks he's up to meeting with Putin and getting something out of him. No way.
Well, I have this piece that Wayne asked me to play, so I'm going to play it now.
Okay.
And to give you a lead in, this is Jane Elliott on racism. I'm going to go ahead and play it now.
Why do we hate? We hate because we're taught to hate. We hate because we're ignorant. We're the product of ignorant people who have been taught an ignorant thing, which is that there are four or five different races. There are not four or five different races. There's only one race on the face of the earth, and we're all members of that race, the human race. But we have separated people into races so that some of us can see ourselves as superior to the others. We thought it would work, I guess. It hasn't worked. It has been bad for everyone. But it's time to get over this business. There is no gene for racism. There's no gene for bigotry. You're not born a bigot. You have to learn to be a bigot. Anything you learn, you can unlearn. It's time to unlearn our bigotry. It's time to get over this thing, and we best get over it pretty soon. I'm an educator, and it's my business as an educator to lead people out of ignorance, the ignorance of thinking that you're better or worse than someone else because of the amount of a pigment in your skin. Pigmentation in your skin has nothing to do with intelligence or with your worth as a human being. It's time to get over that.
Very good.
Yeah, boy, she nailed it, man. She's on top of her game. Where was that? Where did that come from, that clip?
Go ahead, Gwen.
It's been on the net for the last few years, going around on the social
Where did it originate? Where was she interviewed that she made the statements?
Can I move on this, Gwen, here? Back in the mid-60s, Jane Elliott, who you just heard speak, was a school teacher, elementary school teacher. She had a third grade class in Iowa or, you know, one of the Midwest states where there were no black people. And the kids weren't understanding the racial tensions, the riots of, the movement at the time of the civil rights movement. And so to teach the children what racism was, she divided the class up between brown eyes kids and blue eyed kids. Well, it started out that the brown eyed kids were attributed with all the stereotypes of the time of the blacks. In other words, get them blue-eyed kids, right?
Ingenious.
You stink, smell as well. You know, you're not bathed as well as the blue-eyed kids. You know, you're not deserving of being first in line at lunch or out at recess with the other blue-eyed children. you know, because they have brown on. And those kids really learned a bitter lesson.
What a shrewd way to get the point across. I admire that.
And the brown-eyed kids had to wear a collar, like a Peter Pan collar around their neck.
Yeah.
So the other children could tell them distinctively from across the playground that they were lesser than brown-eyed. You know, the brown-eyed children were lesser than them. And you weren't to associate with them. You were to ostracize them.
It's kind of like the Star of David that the Jews had to wear. We're in Nazi Germany, and what a brilliant way for her to present that to the class and really drive the point home. You know, that I have the highest amount of respect for her for that. That's incredible.
And then to turn the tide, then she, in the middle of the week, says, you know what, I was wrong. It's the blue-eyed children who are lesser than. And then the so she, you know, and the next thing you know, right, you know, there was retribution, right? You know, some of the brown-eyed kids were turning into little Nazis, into all their indiscretions and crimes.
But the joke was on them.
Yeah, well, that, exactly right. In other words, you're like, now here's a taste of your own medicine.
Yeah,
and
boy.
Those kids learned, and it was really considered. As a matter of fact, she made Teacher of the Year, a lot of accolades. She started teaching collegiate aspects in,
elementary school.
And she was well noted nationally for
social
that teaching lesson, and she was to teach others, teachers, on how to properly handle this.
She's a real heroine, no doubt about it. Wonderful lady. She must be pretty old by now, or is she still alive even?
She would definitely be in her
70s or 80s maybe.
Maybe knocking on the door of 80.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there was another clip that I'd sent to you, but basically, in just real quick summation was, she's there in a college seminar, and it's all white, and she says, now, the white people in this room here, you're all white, says, I want those who feel that they should be treated like the black people, stand up. Nobody stand up. She says, obviously you didn't understand the directions. Who in here wants to be treated just like the way the blacks are treated in this country? Again, no one stood up.
Right.
She says, there. Now, that tells me right then and there that you know how the black people are being treated. Number two, you definitely don't want to be treated like them. But number three is, what are you doing about it to correct it when you see others doing it? In other words, if you don't speak out against it, you're now enabling it too. So
right.
You're just by sitting there.
And you know, we can make the same analogy between the way people accept or are bowled over by Trump and his bullshit, and and not taking a stand. Although there have been record numbers of people across the entire world taking a stand against that guy. That's wonderful. Yeah. I think back to the Women's March in Washington. Right, the very weekend of his inauguration, that was tremendous. It's a huge, huge demonstration.
The last week on social media, on the socials, the big question has been, the meme has been, you know, are any Trump supporters decent people? That's been the question.
Are they decent people?
Yeah, I asked you both. Do you think that Trump supporters now, 18 months into this and everything that's happened, do you think people who support Trump are decent, good people?
Jack, I'm going to let you answer first. I'll follow up.
Well, you know, my opinion would be they could be, but I would say they are extremely, I mean, dangerously, very, very much misguided, if that's they still believe in that guy, because he is... He's done nothing but lie. He's told over 3,000 lies that have been measured by reputable sources. And, you know, the guy constantly, you can't believe a damn thing he says.
Well, then, for me to follow up on that question is, all right, I can forgive somebody who voted for Trump because they thought they were going to get change. He was something different. He wasn't the status quo. I get that. But now, when you see here, coming into almost, a year and a half, almost 2 years now, in the next few months,
uh-huh.
of him in action, the enabling of the empower and giving validity to the likes of the Klan and neo-Nazis coming to take their country, and you aren't speaking out against it, now you're complicit in his laws.
Complicit,
and
yeah, good point.
Well, Jack, I would say that there's no country on the planet right now where ignorance is an excuse for breaking the law. No,
oh, I agree.
I don't
completely.
Think anybody still supporting Trump is a decent person. I do not. And
that's
I'm a minister.
With you.
I'm a minister, guys, and I look for the good every time. I act in kindness, always. The only place I ever sound off really is with you guys. And I think that anyone supporting him knowingly is basically not a good person. Or as my mother used to say, they're not nice people, honey. We have a call. I'm going to open the phone. Caller 404 area code. Your mic is open if you'd like to say anything.
I kind of want to catch up where you guys are though before I start, you know, ranting and everything. But
welcome aboard,
yeah.
Whoever you may be.
Naj is my name.
Naj, nice to meet you, Naj.
Same. But when you're talking about that group that supports 45, I mean, it's essentially like a firewall. No matter what he does or what he says, they're always going to side with him. So there's a smart aspect to this, too. I think we think of him as an idiot sometimes, and sometimes he's a little crafty. But I think he spends all that time watching Fox News to kind of stay in those folks' vision, stay in the realm of thinking that they're in, and then he just simply applies rhetoric, gives them that, never gives them legislation. He gives
that
5%.
He feeds them meat all the time.
Exactly, and they go for it every time. And you see these people, they'll celebrate on social media about making a liberal upset, not about voting for someone who is putting policies in place that they like or governing in a way that's, you know, responsible or the way forward. Just, you know, they're there for the lulls.
There's a negative perspective. Those damn liberals are trying to take your country away from you again, kind of an aspect, yes.
All that paranoid, just putting people against each other stuff.
Let me interject here, too, and this is a disturbing thing for me, and Nash, just let you know, I grew up on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. Cambridge, Maryland is where Harriet Tubman escaped from the farm she was born on, started the Underground Railroad. My wife, just 20 miles away, is from the area where Frederick Douglass was born and escaped from. And I moved from the suburbs of Baltimore down on the eastern shore of the peninsula of Maryland. And it was the land of the Klan in 67, 68. I can remember even as late as the early 70s, 73, there were still white and black signs on the bathrooms. It didn't mean that we were banning them any longer, but the signs were still up.
Mm.
So to give you an idea of the ground that I came from, and it was totally foreign to me because I grew up in the suburbs of Baltimore where we were inclusive and, integrated, ever since I started going to school, elementary school. And they had not been desegregated until like the year before when I moved back to the peninsula. And now I'm seeing again the emboldenment. Permit Patty, there's a man barbecuing in the park here in Oakland, right? He was a black guy enjoying his Sunday afternoon. But because he was black, she was wanting to call the cops on him.
Oh my God. Well, that's still happening, yeah.
Her mother lost her job and she was selling water to earn a few bucks to help be able to go to Disney World there in California. She was in California. And there was a lady, Permit Patty, I think is what they're calling her, calling her. This little girl doesn't have a permit, to sell water and stuff. She's calling the cops on her.
Yeah, little
black
pathetic.
Gentlemen,
is mowing
gentlemen.
She's got,
we have another. Gentlemen, we have another caller.
All right, go ahead.
I'm going to open that line. 504 area code, your mic is open. Hello?
Yes, greetings. I was just listening
I just tuned into your program. I'm calling from New Orleans, Louisiana, and
okay.
I'm trying to get what the topic is about.
Very good. Glad to have you. Thank you.
We're talking about racism and ignorance and the people that fall for all this stuff that the president keeps saying all the time.
People trying to reintroduce segregation.
Oh, God almighty, yeah.
Because he was mowing the neighbor's grass. He was, you know, an entrepreneur. He's out making money. But his lawnmower cut a little bit of the neighbor's across the boundary line. She called the cops on him because he was, you know, committing some kind of infringement aspect.
There's been a rash of those phone calls to local police.
This has been the hideous aspect of the Trump legacy and the empowerment of what I knew and what I know, because I recognize it, of the old Klansmen, the old John Birch Society. I grew up with that. I know what it looks
mm-hmm.
like.
Right.
I'm like,
can I just add something real quick? There's a danger here in trying to encapsulate all of this with Trumpism, though. All of these
yeah.
things are already here. He just merely played on something that he knew he could rise on. Now,
good
honestly,
point.
We all know you can win local elections by playing, you know, dog whistling and playing up racial tropes. Nobody
mm-hmm.
thought you could win a national election doing that. That's the point to where this is kind of shocking to people. But
right.
like those flashpoints you talked about, like the kids with the lawnmower and all that stuff, that's just
yeah.
one aspect of American racism. American racism is systemic. The bigger issue
right.
is the imprisonment of people, the locking out of certain industries when it comes to jobs, the
right.
education rates, when we talk about the schools being funded based on a tax base, meaning if,
yeah.
if your area is not wealthy, your school will not be funded. Like, those are the American racial problems that actually permeate through society from administration to administration, and this stuff didn't start with Trump. He just was able to take advantage.
And, you know, we're
yeah.
talking about Trump as though he's something new. He isn't really. What this is a revitalized form of Nixon's Southern strategy, where he would play people off against each other, use racism and all kinds of undercurrents to get people upset and fearful and have them react against certain other people just so that he could maintain and get power. And the same thing is going on today. It's all over again.
Jack, the gentleman from New Orleans is saying it's systemic. It's been there.
Exactly.
And now it's really
That's what I'm
exposed.
Saying that, too.
Yeah, and it's
been going
being,
on for years and years and years.
And
Trump
being,
is just another iteration of it.
You know, let me real quick here interject, and you know, I agree. The man from New Orleans, thank you for calling.
Well,
I haven't given
my opinion yet. I haven't said anything.
That
was me. The brother didn't get to speak yet. Sorry about that. That
yeah,
was me.
All right, in conclusion, go ahead.
Shut up. Gentlemen,
ahead,
Noah.
Sir.
Did we lose him?
Yeah, hello?
Hello, New Orleans. Are you with
yeah,
us?
Yeah.
Yeah, gentlemen from New Orleans.
Please, continue. Continue, please.
No, I didn't pine yet. I was listening, and someone else was bringing up the point about that these things have been here before Trump. Someone else
oh,
was
yeah.
making that point.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
that's a
yes,
fact,
but
and it's gone on to our entire history almost.
Right. Well, see, and that's the other thing I want to place. That summer of 67, when my parents, we moved back from the suburbs of Baltimore to the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and I mentioned Cambridge, Maryland, where Harriet Tubman escaped from, H. Rat Brown went down to speak because there was, you know, arrests of, but what it was, when I moved back on the Eastern Shore, there was still segregation, and there was four high school students of that high school there in Cambridge who dared to go in and kneel down and pray in the white-only lobby of the only movie theater in Cambridge. The cops were called on them. They were sentenced. They were given 6 years in prison for that heinous crime.
Good God.
Of kneeling down and just simply praying in the white-only lobby.
Well,
H. went down and had a peaceful
yeah,
kind of like the same thing that you know, others were doing at the time, and they were marching peacefully in unison, in unity, down the street, and the cops opened up on them with shotguns and dogs and turned dogs loose on them.
Yeah,
and
that was...
the people did enough and set the many of the homes and businesses on fire. And Agnew, who later became
vice president.
This was 67, so in 68, one of the speechwriters for Nixon, Pat Buchanan, recognize the name, told Nixon about this guy who's doing a lot of, getting a lot of notice and stuff and national notoriety, the governor of Maryland, Spiro T. Agnew. So basically, and he was a Republican, they sent him down south to convert all those old blue dog Democrats over into the Republican Party, giving the speeches. That's how the South became so Republican, because of Spiro T. Agnew, my ex-governor of Maryland.
Well,
and it all because of four black kids dared to pray in a movie theater in a white-only lobby. That's the history of that.
Yeah, but the point is the moment now. And the moment now is an exposure of the systemic problem. I don't think it just is contained in the United States at all.
All over Russia, it's the same thing. There's anti-black sentiment all over Russia.
And it's lawful to beat your wife or rape your wife in Russia, too.
Yeah,
but the point is, there's a large exposure going on, and one of the reasons this large exposure is happening at a more broadcast pace is because of social networks and people communicating with one another through them.
Right, yep.
And that is the one difference we have right now, is that we're speaking to one another. And in that aspect, we have an opportunity that has not been there before. I'm not quite sure how to describe the opportunity or what it is, but I do know there's a big difference this time.
Can I chime in?
Yes,
this is New Orleans 504. I'm an African American, and one of the things that concerns me when I look at the younger generation of, let's say, African American spokesperson addressing the issue of racism, for example, I'll look at some of the individuals you may find on CNN. April Ryan, Van Jones, and these people, Don Lemon, and others. I have a problem with all this crying they're doing on TV when the issue of race is brought up. Now, we saw civil rights protesters in the heat of death, and we didn't see them cry.
Right, yeah,
and
right.
And this weakness that's being demonstrated by this young black intellectual generation, to me, is scary, because we have been born as black people inheriting this fight. So it's not a time to cry. Number two, we have more resources at our disposal to really execute solutions to many of our ills. There's a little sermonette on YouTube that the late Congressman Adam Clayton Powell gives, called What's in Your Hand. And when I look at black neighborhoods around the country and I see Vietnamese businesses, Palestinian businesses, Korean businesses in the heart of black neighborhoods making millions and millions of dollars, we have to realize we have stuff in our hand. And we're too psychologically dependent on other people to accept us. It's as if there's a race going on, a race is happening, and we're standing on the sidelines watching the race and hoping others take our hand and put us in the race. And I think that we have to understand that we have a tremendous amount of potential to develop power in our hands right in this country, in the United States.
It boils down to one word.
Hold on. Before you move on, please, let me responsibly say something to this. People on CNN, pundits, things like that, why would you look at that as a representation of any movement? Actually talk to the local leaders, talk to the people who are actually active out there, and you'll get a different idea of what they're about. It's not about tears. Second thing, You called into a show that is not all black and said, okay, I think we need to stop doing this. Okay, you're not talking to black people. So that's out of bounds. Then the next point, when you talk about businesses in black areas, black people are no different than any other people. If you're
right.
dealing with a generational impoverished area, they're going to have trouble getting the capital to start a business. Go to a rural, poor, white area. Who do you think is running the businesses there? Not them. The issue in America is capital. There's a correlation right now going from data. There's a strong correlation from your success in America based on your zip code. That's how stratified wealth has become, and that's how locked in some of these communities are. So when we address black people and look at the things that we are facing in this country and say, well, you just need to do this, man, look, that stuff doesn't work in real life and application. It's really good to feel good about it, but it doesn't work in real life.
I'm very familiar with the dynamics that is faced in black communities. What I'm saying is that our orientation of how we go about moving together is wrong. Now, a lot of these groups that are in our communities, they don't go to the bank for loans and all this kind of stuff. They have a whole different mentality of how they work with each other vis-a-vis other people. And what I'm saying is we have the resources actually in our hand to do what we need. We're not empty-handed at all. If we were, people wouldn't be among us becoming wealthy.
Yeah, I don't want to argue with you about this. I'll just say 60% of black people make less than $34,000 a year. The average incarceration rate of black men in any area you want to go to, 18 to 25, is up to 70%. So when you don't have employment and you have to compete in the black market, what do? You try your chances in the black market. This has happened, you know, all the way back from Irish, Jewish, Italian, when they were coming in and they had to deal with the bootleg because bootlegging was a viable job because they didn't have real employment. So all I'm trying to say to you, my man, is it's really easy to say, well, things aren't as bad as these people say they are. Well, actually, they're much worse when you actually start getting into the data, and you're really going to need some intervention, not only from the people, but also from the government. And this idea that black folks want a handout, we have fought in every war.
Well, I'm not accusing you of saying that. Just let me finish.
Black people have fought in every war since the Civil War. They paid taxes for 10 generations straight. And the idea that a nickel coming from the government is somehow some type of theft is absurd.
It is.
Your identification of many of the issues is correct. What I'm saying is that we are conditioned in a way to believe that that the things we face is overwhelming and we can't solve these problems. Okay, I live in New Orleans. Okay, and I was a victim, like hundreds of thousands of people, of Hurricane Katrina. Okay,
right.
We lost our homes and got. But what I have observed is this: those people who had homes, those people at homes, in many respects, came out better. Their homeowners insurance paid off their mortgage, and many people actually built their homes bigger and better than they were before Hurricane Katrina. Now I'm looking at this, and I have to be honest with myself: is we have stuff in our hand to execute appropriate solutions. That's what I'm arguing.
You just have to
take
action. You have to act to move, to make things happen. And the way you do that is through organization and networking and talking to other people and getting ideas and forming a common bond and pushing for a common object. And that's what's got to happen. It's action is the key word.
Jack, what he's talking about is the capitalism in the system in the country and how
then how do you overcome that? Through action and education and things like that. And taking the ball with your own hands and running with it.
But you can do that real easily, each individual can, by being aware of how they spend their money. Especially the black community. How they spend their money and where they spend their money. They can put it back into their own communities.
Right.
Right.
We have a situation where African Americans are hemmed in. We're not only hemmed in by a conservative, very hostile view, but we also are hemmed in by a liberal leftist viewpoint that doesn't want us to use what we have in our hands. It's as if everybody wants and needs to exploit us to give themselves a platform.
The limousine liberals.
Many of these immigrant groups that have come into the country, in many respects, have come in with nothing. They are literally existing off of the African American community. You have Palestinians building big, beautiful homes back in Palestine from the revenue of their enterprises in the black community, where the Arab men do not hire black people. And if they do hire black people, they hire black females to sexually exploit them. Okay, Koreans control the beauty supply market and virtually tell African Americans, we're not going to allow you to operate a smooth beauty supply shop. Okay, and we can go on and on. East Indians, we can go on and on with all of these groups.
I think you're missing the context from the container. What you're talking about is other groups walking into a process already involved and being able to exploit it. Now, if you want to concentrate on those other groups and say, hey, they shouldn't do this, hey, I can understand that. But at a certain point, man, when you're dealing with economics, you're still talking about dollars and cents. You're talking about numbers, and numbers don't care about emotions. So when we talk about these things and they say, well, black people don't want to do this, black people are no different than any other people. They want good for their children, and they want to do good for their family. The issue becomes access to opportunity. The issue becomes being deprived of generational wealth. You go back to 2008 and look at the percentage of black families who were hoping on the American dream to buy a home and got set up for subprime loans. When you're dealing with things like that, generation after generation, decade after decade, it's not a surprise to see where we are. The problem becomes the people who don't see anything, won't look into it, and just want to come with this emotional response of, well, we just need to get up and do it. Okay, that sounds good. There are many plans out there. There are many people working to do those things. But if you think being an American as a black person is going to be easier than it is, hell, look at the working class white folks. It's rough for them right now. So if you think it's going to be any easier for black people to put those things together, I'm sorry. You're sadly mistaken.
Well, what I'm saying is the problem here is that African Americans are taught to be dependent on this system.
This is another right-wing talking point that has lasted for 30 years. People are dependent on the government. You know which states get the most money from the government? The red states who talk about being conservative.
Isn't that something?
This is what I mean. If we don't know the data and we just say things because we've heard somebody repeat it time after time after time, it doesn't make it true. Look into everything. We're in a meme culture right now. People get on Facebook, they'll post a meme that has no historical accuracy. But somebody will read it, share it with another friend who doesn't know much, and before you know it, you got a whole rumor mill going on something that is anti-historical and not close to accurate.
Great
point.
Right.
That's true. It is. It comes down to economics. It does.
Yeah. Gwen, let me ask the gentleman from New Orleans. You bring up a very good point. Look, I love both guests. You're bringing up very good points. Thank you for calling in. I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah.
The gentleman from New Orleans, what do you see as a means to maybe correct this and basically set the aspects into a new direction and better for all? That's my question to you.
My focus is how the African American demographic develops itself. Okay. And I think that we already have in place what I call proto-institutions to infuse with appropriate solutions so we can begin to develop ourselves. For example,
let me restate this, make sure I'm understanding you correctly. Like back in the 1920s, Black Harlem was basically a live, thriving economic engine unto itself. I mean, you had great nightclubs of Louis Armstrong playing and they're all like that. Are you saying that if the
community
interact among itself like that and build itself economically of returning the dollars back into its community, that this could be the solution?
It's a multi-pronged approach. The point is that I guess the essence of what I'm trying to argue is we're not an empty-handed people in 2018. When I go to the courthouses here in Louisiana and I look at deeds of property that black people purchased after slavery and put an X because they couldn't read or write, buying property that was hundreds of acres that they made productive. They had no insurance. They had no credit. They had no loans from the bank. They had no Medicaid, no Medicare. None of the things that exist today, you can't tell me that we're not in a better position to begin to replicate those things based off our social networks, that we're just here totally powerlessness. I don't believe that.
Yeah, and this is what I mean. Like we don't need to make the argument so extreme. I never said we're not better off than we were during Jim Crow, but hell, that's the standard we're setting here. What are we really talking about? And those people you're talking about who signed that X for that property, those were the same people who were run off by terrorism, fake tax laws.
All of them were not run off.
And the Klan.
All of them were not run off.
Oh, hold on. The majority, this was a great migration where we saw 3 million people from the South go to the North to work after they were run off by the terrorist regimes of the South. So when we talk about this story, you say, well, you're saying there's no hope. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying we need to get politically active. I'm saying we need to get socially active as far as organizations and connecting networks to solve local problems. And also we need to push for a reparations bill. We are the most aggrieved group on this planet. The capital to start America. The capital to start America was from American slavery. And then you move on to Jim Crow, black codes, Reconstruct, everything else. So when I have these – look, my man, me and you are not going to agree. I apologize for being rude to you because we had a fundamental difference. But when I hear people regurgitating right-wing talking points and talking as if things are okay.
This is common sense logic that groups all over the planet.
Well, common sense logic is not reality. Common sense logic is shit people say when they don't want to read.
You can't expect the entity that have exploited you and destroyed you psychologically to make you whole. That's not real.
Yeah, but see, that's
unrealistic.
The thing. We're not destroyed psychologically. It never have been. That group for Reconstruction you're talking about, that's probably the greatest generation we produced in this country. They were able to handle the arrows, still build the family, still keep themselves together, and still survive despite everything going on. So, no, I don't think we were ever lost mentally. I think the issue is we're dealing with an empire that is economically burning out and looking for scapegoats at every turn.
Always.
And we just happen to be in a bad space right now. The jobs in manufacturing, yes, that has been shipped overseas. We're trying to figure out the new economy in the midst of people figuring out what? Disruptive technology, which gets rid of old jobs and brings new jobs. There's over 100 taxi drivers in New York who have committed suicide because of Uber.
Gentlemen, let me interject here. I am also
I
worked in the industry my whole life. And, you know, when all the industry moved to China, the manufacturing, things like that, I got hit very hard, too. My family's still back in Maryland. I'm working in Columbus, Ohio, and I've been out here for 6 years away from my family. You know, there's kind of a Me Too aspect here. I identify with what you're saying, you know, but it's not that one's not strictly a black issue because here's a 65-year-old white man that suffered the same consequences. But, you know.
Yeah,
again,
that's an American issue. We've had 30 years of both parties promising to bring back prosperity and brought back neither. They shot everything to the top 5 to 10% and told everybody else you need to work harder, you need to get more skills as those jobs are being shipped off or as that degree that you get lessens in value as you enter the industry. So America has fundamental problems that need to be solved. Me and the brother was talking about black issues. Me and him could go back and forth all night on that stuff, but he has a genuine love and concern for black people, So my disagreement with him is just that, just a disagreement.
Well, I guess I'm confused with this forum. I assume it was a forum focusing on the African-American challenges. That's what, 'cause when I tuned in, I heard discussion about racism. That, so maybe I jumped on the wrong topic and in the wrong conversation.
No, we've been all over the place tonight.
You have not been wrong. You have not committed any egregious errors. I was just bringing up how racism has reemerged as I remember it from the 60s. I thought, you know, but after the Civil Rights Movement that we had addressed this, it was corrected, you know, for the most part, but I never in my lifetime would have ever expected it to come back like I, what I remember as a young, you know, preteen child.
Yeah, it never left.
So, no, it never left. At least somebody was supposed to have had the respectability of, you know, don't call someone the N-word, don't think you're empowered to tell them, you know, yada, 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 you know, all the racial stereotypes that I remember of the 50s and early 60s that was said. And
well,
like
well,
I said,
think about the outright bigots you're talking about. They're going through financial pressure, they're going through social standing pressure and everything else. What do they actually have left except what they told them was special about them being so-called white?
Yeah. Got that.
So in their mind, that's what they're going to hold on to. So it's no surprise that you'll see this. Matter of fact, you used to see a rise in hangings when the cotton price used to drop. So American racism being ratcheted up during economic uncertainty.
No,
like that's
very
you know.
Good point. Very good point, and I agree with you, yes. And that's what we're going through. We're going through, you know, the guy who's had a comfortable middle-class life growing up, working, providing for his family, and all of a sudden, let's take Carrier. All those gentlemen that basically worked their whole life assembling washing machines and refrigerators in Illinois, Indiana,
yeah.
Sorry, right? And, you know, Trump there, he's going to save jobs. He's going to give Carrier all the tax breaks. And shit, the ink wasn't even dry on the paperwork. They kept their tax breaks, but they still moved it to Mexico. And those middle-class white guys, or, you know, the middle class, I'm not going to just exclude white
but
guys.
There is still a blindness to white privilege that both gentlemen are actually talking about at certain points. White privilege is there, and until white wake up and understand that there is, and I'm not flogging my race, or I'm not flogging my side of the room. I'm saying this exposure, everything that's happening right now, is an opportunity for some things to be actually addressed because they can be understood for what they are, whereas it's not really ever gotten there, obviously, before. We might have been polite, and a lot of people really didn't feel they were racist or anything like it, and yet the lack of understanding of what white privilege is a form of racism.
Yeah, I would agree, and I would say, hey, nothing wrong with black people that getting rid of racism wouldn't cure. Like, I mean,
right.
Just the idea that just giving people the opportunity to sink or swim on their own merit, I mean, yeah, that'd be a beautiful thing to see. Now, not having to wonder about things like that, that'd be a beautiful thing to see. But at the same time, like I said, when you see somebody like 45 get elected, the eloquence of that man in that seat, you couldn't picture this any other way. But the way that he was able to get it, which was getting those people riled up and, you know, rolling with them. Now, like I said, the Dems and Repubs are both responsible for this because they decided that they were going to appeal to their corporate sponsors and govern in that fashion. So you see, you know,
right.
time after time.
It's been the biggest crime on our democracy since the Supreme Court accepted it as law.
Yeah. It's a problem.
Gentlemen,
if you saw a headline for any other country and you saw that, something like that law, you would, Citizens United, you would say, oh, look at that third world backward country. That's what you would say.
Exactly.
But that's right.
Exactly. Very well stated, friend. I'm glad you called. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree.
gentlemen, I hate to say so, but we've only got 5 minutes left in the show. I want to thank both callers for calling in. And,
yeah, thanks, Naj and a fella from New Orleans.
Yeah, and apologies to the
both. Please come back.
New Orleans again.
Please come back.
I know.
For sure.
I was good, so
no, you're good. Everybody was well behaved.
Yeah.
No apologies required. I liked what I wanted to hear what you had to say. That's important. That's what really kind of this show is about, is the open dialogue, bouncing off ideas and viewpoints so that we can all put together a better perspective.
Exactly.
And maybe a comprehensive plan of getting this country back on track. Again,
right.
I personally thank both of you. You really added a lot of value to the show, and
yes,
hopefully our listeners will take notes too.
And it's important, you know, everybody, it's important that we take action. To do that, we need to unite. We can't fight each other on small or big points. We've got to unite into an organized force. We've got to unite, we've got to organize, and we've got to take action. And then we will achieve a certain degree of success. And by doing that, we will be pushing forward, which is what I advise everybody to do every single week, because we can't go backwards. We got to go forward. Keep pushing forward.
Well, just friggin' vote would be good too, you know?
That
always
too.
And gentlemen, both of you, in your neighborhood, be proactive. Get out the vote. We have to get this country back with true representation instead
right.
of the corrupted corporate that Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and, you know, the others that have taken this country into the wrong direction.
Well,
all right. That's my ending statement for the show, folks.
Was it ever in the right direction? We've got to begin to wonder here. I thank you, gentlemen, each and every one of you. My co-hosts, Wayne Johnson and Jack Jodell. This has been the Sunday show on Hear Me Monsters Radio. I want to remind everybody that tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. we have Come Now, Don't Sulk. And really, you can get a lot of laughs and a lot of political satire and a lot of political acid tongue with Mummy on Come Now, Don't Sulk with Sybil Gruntjen. It's a lot of fun. And once again, find Jack Jodell's post every week up on Saturday Afternoon Post online. Just put in Saturday Afternoon Post and you'll find his post there. Wayne Johnson is the Minds and Times of F. Wayne Johnson. And if you will, take a look at our sponsor, our producer, Daughters of Isis.
Daughters of Isis.
.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. By the way, ISIS is not a group in the Middle East. The mother goddess of Egypt. So ISIS offset. Anyways, it's been another Sunday. Thank you, gentlemen. We are just about out. And I want to thank the two callers who called in.
Definitely. Please come back.
That was a great stroke of luck because that
good
perspective made it. Okay, that's our show for this week. We will be back.
Have a great week, everybody. Keep pushing
bye-bye
forward. Bye-bye now.
We will be back next Sunday at 6 p.m. And this has been the Sunday show on Hear Me Monsters Radio. Thank you.